The reading is taken from Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2, reading from verse 6. You hopefully would have the whole of Isaiah 2 there with you. Isaiah chapter 2, reading from verse 6. For you have rejected your people, the house of Jacob, because they are full of things from the east, and are fortune tellers like the Philistines, and they strike hands with the children of foreigners. Their land is filled with silver and gold, and there's no end to their treasures. Their land is filled with horses, and there's no end to their chariots. Their land is filled with idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their own fingers have made. So man is humbled, and each one is brought low. Do not forgive them. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust from before the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty. The haughty looks of man shall be brought low, and the lofty pride of man shall be humbled, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. For the Lord of hosts has a day against all that is proud and lofty, against all that is lifted up, and it shall be brought low, against all the cedars of Lebanon, lofty and lifted up, and against all the oaks of Bashan, against all the lofty mountains, and against all the uplifted hills, against every high tower, and against every fortified wall, against all the ships of Tarshish, and against all the beautiful craft. And the haughtiness of man shall be humbled, and the lofty pride of men shall be brought low. And the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. And the idol shall utterly pass away, and people shall enter the caves of the rocks and the holes of the ground from before the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty when he rises to terrify the earth. In that day, mankind will cast away their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to enter the caverns of the rocks and the clefts of the cliffs from before the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty when he rises to terrify the earth. Stop regarding men. In whose nostrils is breath? For of what account is he?
Thanks very much, Alfie, and welcome everyone. We have some sobering truths to consider today, as you'll see. And if you haven't been with us over the last 4 weeks, do go back and listen to some of the talks. We're diving into the last of a four-part series. And today, the issue is the same, really, as last week. And that is, where is it all going? At the end of history, Isaiah the prophet points us forwards to where it's all going. You'll see that in chapter 2, verse 2, where we were last week. It shall come to pass in the latter days, in other words, in the last chapter of history. We may well ask where where it's all going at the moment, with events as they are, as the fragile peace that seems so stable to us creaks beneath our feet. I think that is why it's so refreshing to be where we are in Isaiah at the moment, as he points us towards the very end of human history. And in these last four talks, we have been really just looking at one thing, and that is God's great plan for the universe. And his plan is beyond the scope of our imagination. It is a plan that will affect every single person who's ever lived, whatever they believe. The plans that are on Putin's desk at the moment, or for that matter, anyone else's desk, the CEOs of these great firms, all of those plans will come to nothing. Only one plan will stand. That's what we're going to see today. Over the last few weeks, we've seen what this plan is, as Isaiah the prophet, 700 years before Jesus, speaks, God speaks through him and says, I will restore my people through refining judgment. I will burn away their sin, and I will establish them forever in a new Jerusalem. The gates of this new Jerusalem will be flung open to the whole world. That's what we saw last week. In the last chapter of history, people from all over the world will flock to the God of the Jews and to his mountain. But there is another side to the same story, the same plan, that we must understand, and that is where we're going today. And that is that a day is coming where God will come back in person. If there's one thing to take from this talk, the very simple point of these verses. A day is coming where God will come back in person. What will he come to do? He will come to humble proud humanity and to bring our long-standing rebellion to an end. Just look down at verses 9 to 11, which I think is where we get the summary of the whole of this section. Verse 9, man is humbled, each one is brought low, do not forgive them. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust from before the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty. The haughty looks of man shall be brought low, and the lofty pride of men shall be humbled, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. People sometimes say, don't they, this is my day, this is my time. You'll hear pop stars or rock stars or whoever it is, the musician who's been waiting for years and then they finally step out onto the stage at Glastonbury. This is my day, this is my time. Well, look down at verse 12. The Lord of hosts has a day. That's the point. He has a day when it will be his day and his time. It will by default be the last day of history as we know it, the last day of this age. But it will be the beginning of the new eternal age. The Lord has his day, his time. On that day, he will come back in person, finally to restore the honour that is due to him by bringing to an end the rebellion that began right at the beginning. Those who know where the Bible story begins, back in Genesis 2, when humanity lifted ourselves up against God, and we said, through Adam and Eve, we want to rule instead of God. Remember those words? The devil said, take this fruit and you will be like God. We said, yes, please. But a day is coming when God will come back in person and say, you're not God, I am. This is not your world, it's mine. He will finally restore the honour of his name and bring to an end that long-standing rebellion of this evil age. And so Isaiah says, do not mistake his patience for impotence. Easy mistake to make. Do not mistake his patience for non-existence, as our culture has. He will come back. He will re-establish his total uncontested rule. Do you see that in verse 11? The Lord alone will be exalted on that day. It will be his day, his time. Well, three things and sobering things to note about that day. On God's day, all our achievements will be demolished, all our gods will be abandoned, and those who've persisted in this rebellion will be left cowering before the God they thought so little of. Firstly, all our achievements will be demolished. I think that's the point of verses 12 to 16. The Lord of hosts has a day against all that is proud and lofty, against all that is lifted up, and it shall be brought low, demolished. Against all the cedars of Lebanon, the lofty and lifted up. Against all the oaks of Bashan, against all the lofty mountains, and against all the uplifted hills. Against every high tower, every fortified wall, all the ships of Tarshish, and against all the beautiful craft. There are eight againsts there. The first four are against nature. The second four are against things that we've built. Why does God have a day against trees and mountains? It's puzzling, isn't it? What does God have against trees that he made and mountains that he formed? It seems that these are all symbols of how the world that God has made has been claimed, harnessed, and then boasted in by proud humanity. the cedars of Lebanon were great natural resources of the time. Kingdoms were built on them. They were the resources. Solomon built his kingdom on them. Mountains were the great symbols of the greatness of a land or the greatness of a city. Claimed by humanity. Mine. My kingdom. And so God says, I think the world that you think is yours, that you have claimed, harnessed and boasted in as your own, I will bring it to an end. I will bring down the very mountains that you've boasted in, every single one. I will bring this whole world that you've claimed for yourself crashing down. That seems to be the point of these verses. Puts the Save the Planet environmental agenda into perspective, doesn't it? Actually, there may be some good things about it. Renewable energy. But it won't ultimately achieve anything. God says this creation itself, that you have claimed, proud humanity, as your own, I will bring it to nothing. From what we've claimed to what we've made, in verse 15 to 16, every high tower, every fortified wall, the ships of Tarshish, the beautiful craft. I think this is about human civilization coming to nothing. Everything we've built, everything we've achieved, wiped out. High towers have always been an expression of human ingenuity. We can see that around in London and across the world as people and cities try vie for the highest tower. They've always been an expression of human ingenuity, fortified wall of human strength. The ships of Tarshish were the most renowned trade ships of the Mediterranean. They'd been used by Tyre and Sidon for over 300 years by the time Isaiah was writing. They carried great wealth, but they were also symbols of great human technological achievements. After all, they'd been being used for 300 years. They must have been reliable ships. Very likely they were also beautifully made. We don't have any pictures or designs of them. Very likely they were beautifully made. And in a sense, a technological, even artistic wonder, the ships of Tarshish. They symbolized the ingenuity of man's creative power, his mastery over nature. In today's terms, they were the Lamborghini, the jumbo jet, the NASA rocket, the Tesla, the microchip. God says, on my day, isn't it extraordinary? I will bring all of the technological achievements of humanity to nothing. Not that God has anything against technological achievement in itself, but because it has become the trophy, a trophy of our rebellion. We boast in it, don't we? Aren't we great? Look at great humanity. Look at what we can do. Look at what we've built on our own without God. We don't need him. We're the masters of the world. God will bring it all to nothing. Elon Musk, what incredible, breathtaking technological advance. He will bring it to nothing. It won't stand. There won't be a Tesla left or a reusable rocket. It will all be wiped out. Think of the hours in the laboratories, all the eureka moments of the scientists, the scientific discoveries. He will bring it to nothing. The Lord has a day against the ships of Tarshish, but notice also against all the beautiful craft. Isn't that striking? Do you expect to see that in the Bible? It seems that even our art has become obnoxious to God. Not because God has anything against art in itself, per se. He made us creative. But because our art, like our technology, is one of our greatest boasts, isn't it? Look at what we can do without God. Aren't we great? Aren't we ingenious? Aren't we the rightful rulers of this planet? Isn't it extraordinary? God says the artistic triumphs, notice that word, all, every beautiful craft, the artistic triumphs of every culture will not be allowed to last into eternity. It will have no legacy. The great buildings, from the Taj Mahal to the Kremlin to the Houses of Parliament, erased forever. Every great painting, the National Gallery, gone, forgotten. Every great work of literature, Shakespeare. Now notice, Isaiah does not deny it's beautiful. It is beautiful. It will be gone, forgotten, pointless. God will bring it all to nothing. Not because he has anything against art. He made us creative. Surely in the New Jerusalem with a redeemed humanity, it will be full of creativity, done to the glory of God, full of wonderful art. Think of the technological advance into eternity, the possibilities in God's new Jerusalem, his new creation, filled with a new humble humanity, doing it to the glory of God. Oh, he loves art. He made technological advance. But because of the art of this age furnishes our trophy cabinet, he will bring it to nothing. This is good news, actually, isn't it? The way we boast in ourselves through art. Well, God has a day when he will come back and he will bring to an end our proud rebellion. It will be a day when he will bring all of our achievements to nothing. Secondly, all our gods will be abandoned. That's the point of verses 18 to 21. The idols shall utterly pass away. People shall enter the caves of the rocks and the holes in the ground from before the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty when he rises to terrify the earth. In that day, mankind will cast away their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which they've made for themselves to worship, to the moles and to the bats. What an extraordinary moment this will be. When finally all of the thousands of counterfeit gods that have been worshipped with such vigor and such passion that we've created for ourselves, all of the books that we've and the principles that we've written and made up to go with them, will be thrown away for the moles and the bats. In our language, for the rats and the pigeons. People will cry out, "Why did I ever trust in you? Useless gods." The atheist will throw away his useless atheism, which he has made up and worshipped as a god. When he faces the true God, his creator, he will throw it away and say, "Why did I ever believe my atheism? You're useless to me." The agnostic will toss away the God of indecision. "Why did I ever believe in you?" The Muslim will throw away their Quran and ask, "Why did we ever trust in Muhammad's God?" The Buddhist, their golden statues, the Hindu, the Sikh, the list will go on and on. Tossed aside as they are faced with the true God of the Bible. All of human made up religion, when the true God returns and comes to establish his honor. Thirdly, all those who've persisted in their rebellion against him outside of Christ and his forgiveness, this is talking about people who have persisted in their rebellion against the Lord Jesus Christ, outside of him and his forgiveness, will end up cowering before the God they thought so little of. I did think a couple of times about whether to use that word cowering. It does seem to be what the passage is saying. Verse 10, "Enter into the rock, hide in the dust from before the terror of the Lord and the splendor of his majesty." Verse 19, "The people will enter caves and rocks, the holes in the ground, from before the terror of the Lord, the splendor of his majesty when he rises to terrify the earth." Verse 21, the same thing again. It's as if Isaiah is saying, "I know that you don't believe this is going to happen, so I'm going to say it three times." You get that phrase from before the terror of the Lord and the splendor of his majesty. Now, whether we're Christian or not here, if we think we have the first idea of what it's going to be like for the one who made the universe to come back in all his unfiltered glory, we don't. Think about it. The known universe is 93 billion light years across. Unimaginable distances. We can't even conceive it. We can barely conceive of the size of the sun. This is the universe that God says he stretched out with the span of his hand. What will it be like, think about it, for him to come back, to come here? We haven't even got the first idea. All of the bravado and the bluster of man will be simply gone. All of those who've persisted in their rebellion, shaking their fist at God, will be left in utter terror before the God they thought so little of. They will long for his forgiveness at that point, the forgiveness that they could have had in Jesus Christ. But it will be too late. Do not forgive them. Verse 9. Now, there is something surprising as well that we must just pause on, which is that the New Testament speaks of this day as the day when Jesus will return. Jesus himself says, I'm going to come back in all the glory of my Father. Behold, he, that is Jesus, is coming with the clouds of heaven. Every eye will see him. All the tribes of the earth will mourn on account of him. It will be Jesus who will rise to terrify the earth. God the Son. It will be Jesus before whom they will abandon their idols and cower at the splendor of his majesty. Where's it all going? In the last chapter of history, the nations will flock to the God of the Jews and to his mountain. On the last day, God will come back. It will be his day. It will be his time. He will re-establish his total rule, and he will bring the proud rebellion of humanity to an end. Well, what should we conclude? We get the conclusion, the implication in verse 22, and it is mainly a negative lesson. Stop. Stop regarding man in whose nostrils is breath, for of what account is he? This is the application for us. Literally, cease from man. Stop trusting in him. Stop fearing him. Stop regarding him. I like the way one writer puts it. Be done with man, in whose nostrils is breath. He's made of air. What can he do for you or against you in the context of eternity and where it's all going? He's of no account. And so Isaiah urges us, be done with trusting in his riches. That sparkling career that is put in front of you guys every day, that sparkling career that might fill your bank account with money that cannot help you. Be done with man and his riches. Be done with his chariots. There is no ultimate salvation in NATO. The West will be humbled just like the East. Be done with his technological ingenuity. There is no salvation in medical science. It can delay death like a few chariots. That's all. Be done with man. Be done with his gods, verse 8. There's no salvation in atheism, humanism, agnosticism, mindfulness, Buddhism. No salvation in man's gods. Be done with them. It's all bluster. They will be worshipped passionately. It's interesting that, isn't it? These gods will be worshipped passionately until that day on which they will be abandoned when the Lord Jesus returns. If you can just imagine this for a second, man's kingdom that seems so powerful, so beautiful, so full of hope is resting, if you like, on a spider's web, precariously. These great buildings, these towers. I was in the pub a couple of nights ago with a friend. It's a nice pub in Bermondsey. And I had these verses in mind, though, And I was trying to listen to what he was saying, but I was also looking at the table in front of me and thinking, it's all going to be gone. Go back to your office, tap the table. This building, it'll be gone. He is of no account. There is no salvation in man. Who is of account is God. He's the one we should fear. He's the one who's coming back. And it will be his city alone that will stand triumphant on that last day. That's what we're learning in these two chapters. The New Jerusalem. There won't be anywhere else that's safe on that last day. There will only be one safe place in eternity, and that is to be one of God's washed, redeemed, forgiven people in his New Jerusalem through the blood of Jesus Christ. So, be done with man.